Welcome to Red Cancun Live, your daily guide for the COP16 summit. I'm Dallas Goldtooth.
And I'm Melina Lebocan-Massimo, filling in for Casey Cap Hornick.
Today marks the beginning of the 16th session of the Conference of Parties of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, otherwise known as COP16. This week, hundreds of delegates representing over 192 different countries will come to Cancun in an attempt to negotiate a common framework for addressing climate change.
At the same time, an estimated 100,000 people from campesino and indigenous communities to concerned people from around the globe will converge outside of the conference to demand action from the government representatives. In this show, we will introduce you to some of the indigenous peoples who have come to Cancun to represent communities that are impacted by fossil fuel and extractive industries. We will talk about who they are, why they are here, and what they hope to come to accomplish.
Then for the rest of the hour, we'll be joined by Tom Goldtooth of the Indigenous Environmental Network to reflect on his engagement of the UN process so far and to discuss, according to his view, what are the most important issues to follow in the next couple of weeks. But first, here are the headlines.
Indigenous peoples from around all regions of the world held a preparatory meeting over the weekend in Cancun and created a statement of common issues and demands to present an opening statement at COP16. The statement recognized threats to indigenous food sovereignty inhabitants around the world and called for a change in the modes of production and consumption that are causing climate change. The statement also called out market-based mitigation strategies such as a clean development mechanism and carbon offsets, including forest offsets and REDs, as they are threatening to their human rights, including free, prior, and informed consent. The Indigenous Caucus demanded that the work carried out here at COP16 ensures that the rights of Indigenous peoples in all countries are respected, upheld, and recognized in all final texts and agreements, including implementing mechanisms to ensure the effective participation of Indigenous peoples, including women, youth, and elders. They also demanded the adoption of emissions cap of 300 parts per million.
In other news, a recently released document from the chair of the LCA Working Group faced harsh criticism this week from the Bolivian government. The LCA Working Group was tasked with developing long-term commitments within the COP16 process. The document, which contained the Working Group's expected outcomes of the COP16 session, came under fire for eliminating all of the proposals of the World People's Conference, which took place in Cochabamba, Bolivia, this past April. These proposals include the recognition of the rights of Mother Earth and the full application of Mother Rights principles, including the rights of indigenous peoples and climate migrants. According to a press statement released by the Bolivian delegation, the new document goes even further than the Copenhagen Accord by inviting the World Bank to administer the new climate fund and limiting financing for climate change to $1 billion, ignoring the proposal of the G77 in China to dedicate 1.5% of the GNP of developed countries, and also the proposal of Bolivia to use 6% of the GNP of developed countries. The Indigenous Environmental Network also condemned the removal of the Cochabamba text from this COP16 negotiating document. Beyond the lack of transparency in that process, a key concern with the negotiating document is its blanket support for RED, or reduction of emissions from deforestation and degradation. According to IEN, the Indigenous Environmental Network, RED will threaten indigenous and land-based peoples with eviction and marginalization. It contains no safeguards, no guarantee of rights, and a disturbing array of potential governance challenges. A key element of the Cochabamba Accord condemned the use of market mechanisms such as RED and for violating the sovereignty of peoples as well as their right to prior, free, and informed consent. We'll hear more from the Bolivian delegation later on this week.
A historic case was filed by an international coalition at the Constitutional Court of Ecuador against BP and its crimes against nature. Ecuador recognizes the rights of nature in its current constitution adopted in 2008, which provides the fundamental basis for this legal challenge. The case was brought forward with regard to the massive environmental disaster caused by BP's Deepwater Horizon rig that exploded on April 20th, 2010. The incident exposed BP's drive to maximize profit with total disregard of nature and its rights. The company constantly lied with regard to the scale of the disaster and then used unusually high amounts of toxic chemical dispersants to cover up the spill. The disaster was not limited to the Gulf Coast, but has wider reach throughout the movement of water as well as atmospheric pollutions. The defendants, who also included world-renowned ecologist Vandana Shiva, Nimuno Basi with Friends of the Earth Nigeria, Delphin Descansaca with Equinari, and Celia Cherez of Acción Ecológica in Ecuador are not seeking financial compensation in the lawsuit. Instead, their demands include the BP release all data and information on the ecological destruction caused by the oil spill, and that they reduce their oil extraction worldwide. Speaking after filing the case, the Defenders of Nature insisted that phasing out crude oil as a major energy source should be of critical importance at the climate change conference here in Cancun.
Thank you very much. We're going to be now going into some bios of some of the delegation that's here with the Indigenous Environmental Network. There are a number of indigenous, like I mentioned before, there are a number of indigenous representatives throughout North America that are here to address some of the issues that they're facing in their communities. And so we're going to show you now some of those bios of the delegates.
Thank you.
My name is Clayton Thomas Mueller. I'm a Cree man from Pugatawagan First Nation in northern Canada. I'm the Tar Sands campaign organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network. And I'm here today and for the duration of the COP16, United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, to coordinate the Indigenous Environmental Network's media team. We'll be amplifying the voices of frontline Indigenous communities that are fighting against the fossil fuel regime in Turtle Island and across the world. And we'll be magnifying the issues that they're facing through our media strategy, which is including web-based platform, the RedRoadCancun.com website, as well as various other platforms and allies that'll be broadcasting our stream on the internet to a home near you. So I'm really happy to be here and really happy to be marching in the streets of Cancun with my brothers and sisters in the fight for climate justice.
So hello friends and relatives, my name is Eagle Woman. I am Mandan Hidatsa Narikara. I'm from Fort Berthold, which is located in the state of North Dakota. And I'm here in Cancun, Mexico for the COP16 United Nations negotiations. And basically, I'm here to provide the voice for the community members that couldn't be here in Mexico with us to have a say for what's happening within our community. I work with the Indigenous Environmental Network, predominantly with tribal college students on sustainability issues, but I also work with impacted community members, such as myself, because I've been there. I know what it's like to be in a community that's being targeted by the fossil fuel regime. And I know what it's like to deal with the sicknesses, the things that happen to our people as a result of this industry. And so really we're here to try to create change, try to create a paradigm shift, really. It's we realize that it's no small task that we're trying to accomplish here, but we also realized, coming into these negotiations, we're not guaranteed to make a change. We're not guaranteed that something that we do here is going to make a difference. However, we do realize that if we're not here, and if we don't come and say these things, it's guaranteed that there will never be a change. And so being here, being with my friends, being with my coworkers, I'm bringing the voice of my community members. I'm here because last week I buried a friend of mine. She died of cancer, my age. And I'm here so that I can stop things like that from happening in our communities. I'm here so that when industries come in, we have leverage, we have a voice, we have a say in what happens within our reservation, within our community, within our state. North Dakota is now the fourth largest oil producing state in the country. They boast about it. They boast about our 7 coal-fired power plants. They don't talk about the mercury contamination. They don't talk about the water contamination or the air contamination. All the asthmas and the heart attacks and the increase in cancer rates in North Dakota. And that's what I'm here to tell people about, because we're often forgot about. We're considered expendable because we don't have that many people in our state. So I'm here to make sure that people don't forget about us, that we are human beings, that we're just like the next person. And just because we don't have money, and with that comes that power, doesn't mean that we don't have feelings and thoughts. We're people and we want to be heard.
My name is Ben Paulus from Six Nations of the Grand River Territory in Canada, and I work with the Indigenous Environmental Network. And the reason why I'm here, why we're here as a group, is because Indigenous peoples are going to be the most impacted communities by climate change, but not just by climate change and the impacts of a changing environment, but also by a number of the specific ways that governments and companies want to try and say they're resolving climate change. And so what we're here for is we're here to try and bring the message of Indigenous peoples to say that, you know, we're standing up against false solutions, we're standing up against, you know, what governments are proposing, and we're saying that it's time for respecting Indigenous rights and implementing Indigenous sovereignty. And really, by doing that, you know, governments and really the whole world has at its, you know, doorsteps one of the best tools to really stop climate change and also deal with, you know, a number of the other serious human, environmental, and social issues around the world.
Thank you for all the delegates that have come with Indigenous Environmental Network. There's a lot of hard stories out there. There's a lot of hardship that a lot of our delegates have faced in the communities when dealing with climate change or fossil fuels or extraction industries that have been in our communities for many, many generations. And so it takes a lot of courage for people to be here, a lot of courage for these individuals to come this way to voice their opinions, to voice, bring that voice of what's going on back home to an international place like this. So thank you to all of you that are doing the work out there.
Hi, hi. And also, now we're going to go into a music break. We're going to show some musics from around the world while we're here. But we're also going to see after that an interview that was recorded earlier today with Tom Goldtooth, the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Take a look.
Hey!
We are very happy today to have as our first guest on the program a man who has been a very influential leader in the world of grassroots organizing. He is the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network, a founding member of the Durban Group for Climate Justice, a co-founder of Climate Justice Now, and a member of the Indigenous Peoples Forum on Climate Change within the United Nations framework here at Cancun at COP16. For the past 20 years, he has been known as one of the most vocal grassroots environmental justice leaders in North America. His name is Tom Goldtooth, and we are very happy to have him on the show today. Hello, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning. So tell us more about yourself. What tribe are you from back home, and what's your role within IEN's delegation here at in Cancun?
Well, it's very important for us to be here. I'm an enrolled member of the Navajo and the Dene Nation. My hunka is the Bedewakantuan Dakota people of Minnesota, and my homeland right now is in Minnesota, and it's really important for our native people from what we call Turtle Island to have a strong voice here, to have a strong presence. So our Indigenous Environmental Network has been bringing that voice, that voice of struggle, the front line of resistance by many of our traditional societies from Alaska all the way down to United States, throughout Canada, to be really, you know, strong in what we're saying as far as demanding climate justice and recognition of the rights of Indigenous peoples. There's a lot of false solutions being pushed here, and so it's that voice of our Native people that's important.
So how do you describe this type of work that you do here at the Climate Change Forum and back home? How do we bring it back, this message back to communities? How do you get, what's the most important message back to bring back home?
Well, what's very important for our people to see is that we feel that the climate negotiations have been co-opted by multinational corporations. It's been co-opted by the industrialized, rich northern countries like United States and Canada, European Union, and a lot of the solutions that have been developed, such as relying on market-based systems of carbon trading, carbon offsets, are mechanisms that are hiding the issue of where we need to go. So what we're seeing here is that we have to break that apart and put it into a common language of what we're talking about. As Native people, we have to go to the heart of who we are. You know, talking to our traditional people back home. In Minnesota, many of our people, both Anishinaabe and our Dakota people, are seeing that climate change is real, the unpredictability of weather patterns right now. And, you know, we're really concerned about how that has negative implications to our treaty rights, our right to hunt, gather, fish. And this is something that also affects many other tribes, whether they're coastal tribes on the Pacific side or the Alaska side, or those Alaska natives that's part of our network that are concerned about the expansion of oil drilling, the expansion of fossil fuel developments, such as Shell company pursuing offshore drilling in the Beaufort Sea and the Chukchi Sea. So what we're doing here is to lift up the contradictions and also lift up the importance for an industrialized society, the importance of the world to reevaluate what its relationship is to the sacredness of Mother Earth. So there has to be a new paradigm of thinking as far as looking at the root causes of what's causing climate change. And now, you know, there's an emerging movement of social justice groups and women group, youth groups that are starting to recognize that it's going to be Indigenous peoples and our traditional knowledge that we have solutions to resolve this crisis we're in.
So what are the different approaches that IEN is taking between the inside and outside strategies here at COP16?
That's an excellent question, because many of our viewers back in the belly of the beast, as we call it, back in the United States, you know, we participate domestically in federal policies, national policies, and we go and lobby in Congress on issues that are very important to us. So we're very familiar with the processes of being involved in policy development. So we call that an inside strategy here at what we call the Conference of the Parties. The parties are the governmental representatives of countries throughout the world. Those are the parties of this United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Okay, so also participating in this convention here is non-governmental organizations who are, you know, labeled as observers, and also indigenous peoples organizations. So as indigenous peoples, we're coming together from every region of the world to lift up our right to have a voice, and we're looking at the importance of this Conference of the Parties, the governments, to recognize the full rights of indigenous peoples, consistent with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. It's very critical. And so what we have developed as Indigenous Environmental Network is to have basically an insight strategy to where we have to have Native people from the United States, Canada, and Alaska who are on point as far as in the negotiating process to lift up those issues that we're putting forward. On the outside now, there's a convergence of social movements throughout the world, especially here in the Latin American countries. There's a movement of the people, the grassroots people, demanding climate justice, looking at this issue from a human rights approach, looking at this issue from a social justice, it's environmental justice, and it's a public health issue. We got people who are basically in a life and death situation that's resulting from inaction. So part of that passion of social movements, of indigenous peoples coming together, we're involved with an outside strategy that's lifting up these issues and involving popular education. We're involved with helping to build the base of resistance, being involved with lifting up our voices as youth and elders, importance of indigenous peoples, doing nonviolent direct action, because we gotta have that attention from the media. Somehow there's been a blackout in all these different conferences of the parties we've been at, and indigenous peoples, we've been here, but we've been invisible. So we've been very effective of bringing in action teams, bringing in people with media and communication skills to communicate to our folks back home. We're participating in an alliance with the La Vía Campesina. You know, they have put a call for action on December 7th, a global protest and action day where there's going to be 1,000 Cancuns. So we're going to be asking people back home from our reservations, our reserves, our Native people in Alaska, indigenous peoples throughout the world, and all our supporters, that we have to mobilize. We got to do 1,000 Cancuns, that there are people back home. You can do things to support your indigenous brothers and sisters here in Cancun. How, with the question is, how are all these issues of climate change affecting you, and how is that affecting your rights, your treaty rights? And so we have to lift this up. We got people here from the tar sands area of northern Alberta, Canada, who are feeling, you know, the effects of the encroachment of the expansion of fossil fuel development, you know, at the expense of the rights of the local communities of Cree and Dene and Métis. You know, our people are related to the northern Dene, you know, the southern Dene. We are the southern Dene. So we see that there's a pattern here also as we start working with Indigenous peoples of the South. And that's what we've been doing, is mobilizing a movement of resistance, demanding real solutions, not false solutions.
And so right now we're going to take a look at a past action that IAN took at COP 15 in Copenhagen.
We were here today to hand a basket of treaties and international frameworks that Prime Minister Harper needs to honor so that we can come out of here with a legally binding commitment to hard, hard caps on emissions globally.
I have brought the words of my chief, Chief Alan Adam of the Athabasca Chippewa First Nation, that is asking for a moratorium on new permits, that a proper consultation process gets put into place with my people so that we do not continue this project.
We stand in solidarity with First Nations activists on the front line of resistance fighting against the Harper minority government and their attempts to commit cultural genocide and to destroy the ecosystem of Canada, which Native people rely on for their subsistence, for their cultural link to the sacredness of Mother Earth.
They've already cut down a boreal forest the size of Greece. Every single day, 11 million liters of contaminated water is leaching into the Athabasca. There are cancer clusters in four-year-olds and four Chippewans. This is the death of nature.
And why do you think there's climate change? When you poison something and you make it sick, it changes. When you get sick and you have a fever, what do you think happens? In 1 month, I lost 13 family members in 1 month. How can that be? For money? For profit? And when the world dies, and when our Mother Earth cannot survive anymore, what will their money do for them? Can they eat it? Can they breathe it? Can they drink it? What are they thinking? They're making us lose everything.
Our government signed the Kyoto Protocol and then made a mockery of international law. They're making a mockery of everything that developing countries are fighting for inside the Bella Center. They want legally binding agreements. We all want that. But legally binding agreements don't mean anything when countries like Canada increase their emissions by 26% in a period when they were supposed to be reducing them. All Canadians need to understand this because Canadians are starting to change their behavior. They're recycling, they're changing their light bulbs, they're doing all of these consumer-oriented things, but all of it is being undone by what is happening in the tar sands. We need to unite on this. Thank you.
And so we need to shut down the tar sands now, implement the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples.
Shut down!
Tar sands!
Shut down!
Tar sands!
I say fight for, you say justice! Fight for!
Justice!
Fight for!
Justice!
Yeah!
And we're back with Tom Goldtooth talking more about what to expect in the UN negotiations here in Cancun. So what are the key points that IAN wishes to be heard in the UN negotiations here in Cancun?
Well, first of all, recognition of the full rights of Indigenous peoples needs to be reinserted into the negotiating text. Unfortunately, we have a situation of lack of transparency and a multilateral decision that was made prior to this convention here on climate negotiations that removed earlier language on recognizing excellent elements of the Cochabamba People's Agreement that lifted up the importance of the human rights of farmers, the human rights of women, the human rights of our Indigenous peoples, because we're the most vulnerable of the effects of climate change, global warming, and this whole situation of unpredictability in weather patterns. So the rights of Indigenous people has to be recognized. That's consistent with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The second point is the recognition of the rights of Mother Earth. And that's part of our movement that we're pushing for people to recognize that we need to have a new paradigm on redefining what our relationship is to the sacredness of Mother Earth. because we feel like the human beings that are part of an industrialized mindset, okay, have lost their understanding of how they relate to nature, how they relate to Mother Earth. And within our indigenous thinking, you know, we look at the four elements of life. We look at our air that we breathe. We look at our water. We look at the ground, the soil, and also the importance of fire that guides us. So all these elements, okay, have been, as far, you know, all these elements aren't recognized as far as reflecting how we make our decisions and the importance of these elements of life. So that's the second point, is to reframe how we look at the earth, because that has to be the foundation of how we make decisions. And we're looking at the well-being and concept of looking at the well-being of our communities, our families. It's very important. And the other point is that we have to have decisions made, and we have to have policies embraced by both developed and developing countries that have to look at shutting that valve as far as the production, the consumption of fossil fuels. And we're in a situation right now, and this is reality. Mother Earth cannot absorb any more carbon. And the bathtub of carbon is overflowing. The atmosphere can't contain it. The soil can't contain it. So we have to move away from an economic system that relies on fossil fuels. We got to have a transition to a clean, renewable energy system. We got to look at consumption issues. So we have to keep the oil in the ground. We have to have a moratorium against any new fossil fuel development. And that's what we're pushing in the United States and Canada and Alaska. So those are some of the key principles that we're looking at as part of climate justice. And we need real solutions, not false solutions. False solutions around technologies of creating genetically engineered trees that violate a lot of our traditional principles of who we are, of manipulation of the sacred, relying on market systems to get us out of this deep mess that we're in. Carbon trading and carbon offset are not real solutions. They basically benefit the polluters of the north. In fact, to get away with expanding the combustion of greenhouse gas emissions. So those are some of the key points that we're moving forward on. And we're supporting the plurinational government of Bolivia, who has went out, way out on the limb in supporting of the peoples who came together in Cochabamba in April of 2010. And out of that convening of this global meeting was the development of the Cochabamba People's Agreement and the Declaration on the Rights of Mother Earth. So we have to lift that up, bring that back home. We have to learn what are those agreements that the peoples developed. And so we're here to lift that up.
So what major issues or what should people be looking out for in the next couple of weeks while we're here in Cancun that we're going to be issues that need to be addressed regarding what we've just talked about?
We got to look at you know, how the governments are moving forward. We have to look at the language that the media is spinning. We got to look between the cracks. We got to lift up that veil of falsehood. And, you know, we have to look at alternative media, you know, such as our indigenous media and communications team and other media that's here. We gotta look between the lines, because there's a lot of investment by multinational corporations right now that do not want the people back home to see what's really happening here. We got to look at whether or not the United States and Canada and other industrialized countries are really making that important step to support a legally binding agreement to cut carbon emissions. We are demanding 50% reduction under 1990 levels by 2020. And that's what we, you know, has to happen. The United States right now has been, you know, moving on a 6% reduction level by 1990. And that's insane. You know, this, we need to turn this around. So we need to look at what the governments are really doing, and we're able to bring that truth to the light through our media. So stay tuned. Stay tuned to our Red Road Cancun.com blog, and we're going to be communicating with you.
That was Melina doing an interview with Tom Goldtooth, again, of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Good job there.
Thank you.
It's amazing that you got there and here in the split of a second.
Like that.
You're powerful like that. Well, that's all we have for today. Before we go, I'd like to ask a few questions. Why did you come to Cancun? Like, what brought you here?
Well, I think it's, you know, a lot of Indigenous peoples are on the front lines and are facing resource extractions. You know, we're either at the source of pollution, toxic chemicals, or we're either on the receiving end a lot of times from climate change because of these, you know, all these toxic chemicals and carbon emissions that are going into the atmosphere. So I come from a community that's from far up north in northern Canada, and we're experiencing detrimental effects to the land, to the air, and to the water. And because we're also at the source, but it's funny because we're also on the receiving end. We're seeing droughts, we're seeing erratic behaviors, and, you know, the change of weather patterns. So I'm here to talk about why our Indigenous peoples are always the ones that are, you know, suffering the harsh effects, you know, the first on, you know, on the receiving end, and all the ramifications that are associated with climate change. And so I want to bring that message to the forefront, talk more about tar sands extraction and, you know, how that's a false path to go down, because it's based on a fossil fuel based paradigm, which is very detrimental to a lot of communities and will be globally as well. So that's why I'm here. Why did you come?
Well, I guess before I say my piece, I think that's a very shared experience. A lot of people have, you know, it's the specifics are usually a lot different in our communities, but overall it's the same processes that are happening. And so it's good to see so many people here affected by such terrible things, but yet they're here making their voices known, making their voices be heard, and you know, they're doing such an amazing job. For me, you know, I came to Cancun as a part of a media team, specifically to work on these voices the voices that are coming here, the people that are telling their stories. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that these voices are heard, not only in the greater world, but more specifically within their own communities, so that people back home in the communities can know that they're being represented out there, you know, and they can also be aware of what's being said about, you know, their community and who they are and what they're going through. I think it's a dual process. It's empowering, when at the same time, I think it's just empowering and encouraging. I think it's a pretty awesome thing to be a part of, to do a lot of this media work. And just make the message that we're trying to bring here just that little bit more known. Mm. And so I'm really happy to be here in Cancun. I mean, it's Cancun. It's nice weather, so it's really nice.
It's a beautiful place.
And I think that's a good segue into my next question is, in your opinion, how do you feel, what's the importance of media, you know? And, you know, this is a major year for IEN, in so much as that Indigenous Environmental Network has really gone to great lengths to make sure that that we are able to carry the stories here to the greater world. Mm. So how do you feel about why is media important in this process? Mm.
Media is extremely important because I think a lot of times, you know, we're also on the receiving ends, especially Indigenous peoples, especially with mainstream media. A lot of times our stories aren't picked up, or a lot of times our stories aren't carried. The truth doesn't get out there of, you know, the impacts that we're actually feeling, you know. So it's time for us to speak for ourselves. It's time for us to be the ones producing our own media. It's time for us to be the ones that are saying, you know, what the message is, instead of it being skewed through other, you know, lines of communication. So I think it's really important for us to be here, to be creating our own media, to be bringing it back to people back home so people can hear and see what's happening here on the ground in Cancun. You know, so I think it's good for us to spread this message here and what's happening. So I think that's, for me, that's why media is so important. It's really empowering for people to be able to speak their own messages and let their voices be heard.
You know, I don't think I could say it any better myself. I think I fully agree. I think you know, I just reiterate, ditto. That's basically ditto. What it is. You know, you hit it right on the nail there. Yeah. So I'd like to thank the viewers out there.
Yes, thank you for watching and join in every day. And make sure you follow along on redroadcancun.com every day to get updates, to get press releases, to get, you know, this show, but as long as a lot of other things, you know, check out all the delegates' bios. It's a really great website, so check it out when you get time. If you can't catch this show, check out the rest of the updates online.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for watching.
Native nations, it's time to unite, stand together as warriors, it's time to fight. We don't see boundaries, solidarity's a must, 'cause we didn't cross their borders crossed us.